Well, my name's Tim Wolf. I'm the lead pastor here at United. We're excited to continue our Reimagined series. Though we've been displaced from Owings Mills High School, and we're here in the movie theater this morning, we're still reimagining church together. And we've got 3 weeks left of this series. And you know what they say, you save the best for last. We've still got some great teachings coming up as we reimagine church and Jesus together. But next week, we'll be back in the school, so don't come here. We'll be back in the school with our normal setup, experience, full band, taking communion together. If this is your first time, thanks so much for coming to United at the movies. It's so much better even at the high school. Believe it or not, going to a public high school and sitting in these comfortable seats, it's a great experience. And so we'd love for you to join us next Sunday back at the high school. But has anybody here ever been accused of not listening to somebody? Raise your hand if you have been accused. Oh my goodness, like everybody, right? Has anybody said, are you listening to me? And you said that to somebody else? About 3 years ago, my daughters and I, so my oldest daughter, Lily, and then my second oldest, Isabella, we run together a lot. We run about 3 to 4 times a week, and they help keep me in shape. Right now, I now keep up with Lily. She's my oldest. She used to keep up with me. Now I'm keeping up with her. But we've been running for 6 years now together, and they helped me train for a half marathon and a marathon. But 3 years ago, this change started to take place in our family where we knew that God was moving us on to a next step of life. And that was very distracting for me, wondering, where are we going to go? How am we going to afford moving back to the Baltimore area? There's a lot of unknowns in the picture for this transition for us. And so it became very distracted. And so our runs, I'm having like multiple conversations. You know what I'm saying? Like a conversation in my mind, trying to think through life and details and having conversations with different people that is happening in the workplace setting, and then actually trying to have a conversation with my daughters. Because that time was like valuable for us. It was our time where we would catch up, where we'd get to know what's going on in our lives and talk about our day and the joys and challenges in life. And it became very clear to my daughters that I was very distracted because I started to say things like cool when they would say something like, I failed my math test today. Or like, you know, or they'd share something that wasn't good. And I was like, oh, it's good. And it's like, Dad, are you listening to me? Yeah, I'm listening to you. And it's one of those things where I'm hearing you, right? But I'm not listening to you. Almost like Thanksgiving is coming up. You fall asleep watching football and you're half asleep, but you're hearing the conversation take place in the room. Has that happened to you? Maybe not at Thanksgiving, but another time where you're half asleep, half hearing what's going on. Well, it was kind of like what was happening with me and my daughters. And how do you think that makes them feel? It doesn't make them feel valued. It doesn't make them feel loved or cared for. Is their dad connected to them? Does their dad care about them? You know, as we reimagine church, I share that because I wonder if that's what people think about the church. Does the church really care about me? Does the church really value me? You know, in the same way that I was distant and cold to my daughters, I think the church has become distant and cold to many people that don't darken the doors of a church. And yet the church should still be involved and engaged in their life. You see, the reality is churches are in communities all over the world, not just here in this community. They open up doors, they have church services, we do different programs. But the question is, are we in the world, not just... Are people coming and seeing what we do as a church, but are we going and doing? And I think that the difference that I experienced with my run with my daughters in terms of not fully being fully engaged is the experience a lot of people have with the church. The church really isn't engaged with me. They don't listen to me. They don't know what my needs are. They don't know how to care for me. And we're trying to reimagine a church that doesn't just say, come and see what we do, but that says, go and do and be the church outside the walls of a Sunday morning experience. That's what we want to talk about this morning, and we want to talk about why this matters, why the church needs to go and do, not just come and see. And when I think about being in a movie theater and why this is important, I think about a movie that's related to war. It's one of the last movies that I saw in a movie theater a little over a year ago. Does anyone want to take a guess about a movie that came out last year that was about a war? Oh, bingo. You guys got it right away. Hacksaw Ridge. And I want to take a moment, too, to honor those that have served in military in our country. I know there's a handful of men and women that are here. Woo! so that have been or are currently serving in the military. So thank you so much. I hope you enjoyed your Veterans Day yesterday and even this weekend, and that you feel honored by our country, as you should be. But the movie Hacksaw Ridge, I'm not sure if you saw the movie, so I'll tell you a little bit about the storyline that I saw. I kind of learned my history through movies. I know that's very sad, but I love movies that are about like real stories, because then I will go and I'll read about what actually took place, and so and see kind of fact check, but also look at the surrounding events. And as I learned about Hacksaw Ridge, what I learned about is this battle that this movie depicts is the Battle of Okinawa in World War II. It was one of the longest battles. It was 82 days, and it took the lives of 240,000 men and women. The movie highlights the life of a corporal called Desmond Doss. And Desmond, he sees the need for soldiers to enlist. And so he enlists in the Army, and he knows that there's a need, so he enlists in the Army. The only thing is, he's a conscientious objector. And so it's like, well, why would you join the Army if you don't even want to pick up a gun, touch a gun, smell a gun, and let alone shoot a gun? And so he wanted to join the Army because he was more interested in saving lives instead of taking lives. And so what job is left for somebody who's part of the Army that doesn't want to pick up a gun? There's a medic. And so he was a medic. And in this battle, what it does is it portrays Desmond as going into battle with all of his comrades, except he's carrying bags that are going to take care of them. And they get completely overwhelmed in this part of the battle. So it's 82 days. So this is just one of those 82 days. And they retreat very quickly. The only thing is, Desmond doesn't retreat. He kind of stays on the battlefield, because even though hundreds of men, American soldiers, were killed that day, there were hundreds that are wounded too. And so they were just, they were wounded to the point where they couldn't retreat. And so Desmond stayed up there for them, because they're up on this ridge. When I say up there, they're up on this ridge. And what's happening is Japanese soldiers are walking around finding any alive soldiers that are still alive, but they're wounded, and they're just taking their lives. They'll just take a gun and shoot them and take their lives. It's very brutal. And Desmond stays up there even though this is happening. And he's kind of like scurrying around and hiding out in the battlefield while this is taking place. And in the course of one night, he is staying away from the Japanese soldiers that are looking for any alive American soldiers still. And he saves the lives of 75 men in one night. He goes and he rescues them. What he does is he ties them up and he drops them down this ridge and lowers them down to safety. And if it wasn't for him, 75 moms would have lost a son. Many wives and kids, their dad wouldn't have come home from battle because of him. Because he went into the community. Why does it matter that the church is engaged in the community? It's because the church is supposed to go and do. Because people's lives are broken and messed up, and they need a Desmond Doss to come rescue them and bring them to life so that they can live longer and help them to know Jesus Christ. The church exists so that we can go and be ones that share this great news with the world. And this matters. Apostle Paul, one of the first followers of Jesus Christ, writes about why this matters in part of the book of the Bible called Romans. And it says, "For everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. But how can they call on him to save unless they believe in him? And how can they believe in him unless they've never heard about him? And how can they hear about him unless someone tells them? And how will anyone go and tell them without being sent?" That last word is the word of the day, sent. It kind of lands there, but there's this progression that Paul builds to, is that we need to be sent ones. People are sent. Why are they sent? Because they need to tell others. And it goes backwards through this passage. And when people tell others about the life-changing news of Jesus Christ, then they hear that message and they believe that message. And when they believe that message, they will be saved. But that message isn't heard unless somebody is sent. That message isn't believed unless somebody hears the good news. This word sent's interesting too, because in a book of the Bible called John, one of Jesus' closest followers writes about his experience with Jesus Christ, and 44 times he uses this word sent to describe Jesus Christ. Jesus referred to himself as a sent one very often in his life. He actually says these statements: "The Father who sent me," or "I do the will of the one who sent me," or "No one can come to me unless the Father who sent me draws him," or "My teaching is not my own, but the teaching of the one who sent me." See, God didn't place Jesus on earth. he sent Jesus to earth. And Jesus took the world by storm, and with news of his arrival, he spread quickly. People were drawn to him because of how he engaged the world, how he went into the world. I love this phrase from a translation of the Bible called The Message, where it says this. It says, "The word became flesh and blood and moved into the neighborhood." Jesus is the word, and it says Jesus became flesh and blood, meaning God came down to earth and moved into homes and neighborhoods, not castles to be honored and praised, but to live among people. God lived among people and moved into the neighborhood, and he restored and healed people. He reached out to the marginalized of society and brought them in and included them. He taught about the kingdom of God and how every person can be a part of the kingdom of God. My question is, okay, that's what Jesus did, but where did he do it? Did he do it in a church building? Because I think in America, in our culture, we think church happens in a building. But if you look and study the life of Jesus Christ, church didn't just happen in a building. Jesus did go to a synagogue, but I think if Jesus came 2,000 years later, these are some of the places that he would show up. Where would Jesus be? He would show up in grocery stores, shopping malls, even though there's no mall in Owings Mills, weddings, graduation parties, homes, playgrounds, birthday parties, churches. He would go to church still. Hospitals, coffee shops, restaurants, social services office, all of these different places that you and I have probably been to once or twice or more than that, or maybe we've never been there before. That's where Jesus would go. It kind of reminds me of Where's Waldo? Does anybody ever read a Where's Waldo book? I hesitate. I said read. You don't read Where's Waldo. So Where's Waldo is this character that like shows up in all these different scenes, and they're different scenes of different parts of history and different people groups. And that's kind of like if Jesus came, he'd be like the Where's Waldo. Where is Jesus at? And he went everywhere. And that's the thing about being a church. It's not just a building. It's being in all the places that Jesus was. Because Jesus, at the end of his life, said to his followers, he said, just as the Father sent me, remember that word sent? He uses it again. In the same way that the Father now sent me in all these different places to all these great things, now I send you. And our identity as Christ followers isn't just passively being a Christian, but it's actively now being a sent one. It's God's given us purpose to life. We're to be sent ones just like Jesus Christ, to be like the Where's Waldos of Owings Mills, Reisterstown, Pikesville, wherever you live, and to be found in different corners of this community. And the reality is, we're already sent. You go to work Monday through Friday, possibly on the weekends. You hang out with different people groups, whether it's sports organizations or community service organizations, or whether it's social groups that you hang out with. We're already sent. But the question is, do we view ourselves as that? How do we know, and what does it mean to be a sent one? And I want to give you this term that a pastor out in Las Vegas uses to describe what it looks like to be a sent one. It's called gorilla lover. All right? Gorilla lover. And by gorilla, I'm not talking about monkeys, not that kind of gorilla, but thinking about Hacksaw Ridge and thinking about warfare, Veterans Day, it's a type of warfare. So it's a guerrilla strategy, meaning it's a patient strategy where you ambush attack your enemy and you realize that the other side's not going to give in just because of one little attack or one skirmish, but it's the persistent ongoing attack that'll wear them down. And it'll wear people down to know that they just kind of give up. I can't take this anymore. And so this term is like, that's kind of a weird term for a Christian who's a sent one to identify with. Well, why is that? It's because that word love. That love, that word makes all the difference. We're to be guerrilla lovers. We're not fighting. We're not against anybody. We're for people. And so we want to love people on an ongoing basis and eventually, in a sense, wear people down. Like in our personal relationships, in a church community, to be able to say, why do you do all this? Why do you show up in those blue t-shirts all the time? Hopefully, after years, people will see United Church more and more in our community. And that we're continuing to reach people and care about people and love people. And they would say, why? Because of guerrilla lovers, the persistent, ongoing loving that we do as a church. But even that, for you personally, in your own personal relationships that you would be engaging in that. See, Jesus embraced this guerrilla lover concept. He was smart and creative, intelligent. He served people in surprising ways, and he consistently and persistently loved people until they would say why. And so he showed love and service and kindness and generosity, and that's what we want to do as well. And we've been doing that as a church. If you haven't seen us in a blue t-shirt yet, maybe today's the first day you've seen one of these blue t-shirts. Wouldn't surprise us. There's 170,000 people just in this community. And so for 170,000 people to take notice of a new church in its infancy would be amazing for every person to see us. But we'd show up in these t-shirts, just as Leah shared earlier, our community impact director. And we just say, hey, we're for this community, and we want to be known by what we're for. And so we're just serving this community in any way that we can in Northwest Baltimore County. We want to come and move out into this area in the same way that Jesus did, because when I say come and move out, this church, United Church, was started with 30 people on the other side of town from White Marsh that came out and said, we want to make a difference in the community and be a visible presence of the life and relationship that Jesus wants to have with people. And we've been really encouraged. Even as a small little church, we're making a difference. We're making a difference in our own little way. I just talked to two leaders at Stevenson University, so just down the street. And so two different leaders there, I built a relationship with them, and they've said, I'm sending students to United because I love what you're doing, and I want students that I interact with to go to your church. And that's so encouraging. The Baltimore Humane Society, we've done different events with the Baltimore Humane Society. And one of the things that Wendy, the director there, shared with Leah when we were opening our doors, she said, you know, it's been really great having you here. I'm really sorry that you're opening up. We won't see you anymore. And we're kind of like, what? Why won't you see us anymore? She just kind of thought we were just doing these things in order to start a church. It's like, no, this is what we want to continue to do. We're going to keep coming out and serving along with you. And so you saw that on December 2nd. We're going to continue to serve along with the Baltimore Humane Society. We're linking arms with the community, not coming in and being the heroes of this community, but linking arms with others in this community. And so the Reisterstown Improvement Association, we showed up to something called the Bloomin' Arts Festival back in May. And we just volunteered helping art vendors set up. They loved and appreciated so much. They've called our church three times since then to come out to other events and say, can you help us here? And we have. And so we're building a relationship with people because we want the church to be known by what we're for, not because United Church is great, but because Jesus is great. He said, I'm grateful in the infancy of our church that we're having just a small little ripple effect so far. But here's the reality, is if we really want to be reliable and be a church that's dependable, we need to continue to do this. We need more time. If we want to be known as generous, we need to continue to be consistent. But as a church, we just don't view ourselves to love the community in kind of corporate ways like this. Like, okay, great, check off the list. We're doing this United to Four thing. We're being sent ones. Well, those are things that we do together. I want to talk more about things that you do when you're alone. It's easy for us as a church when we get gathered together to be excited to love on a community. I think that's why Jesus sent his disciples in pairs. Like when they first started the church, he sent his followers in groups of two to go. Because I think it was easier for people to like kind of muster up the courage to go and to share and share the love of Christ with others. And so it's easy for us to do that corporately. But how about when we go out to our workplaces, our homes, our neighborhoods, our friendships, whatever groups that we're a part of alone, how are we representing Jesus Christ? Because we engage in guerrilla loving our community as we gather at events and projects at set times. So that's going to be something we'll do consistently. But we also want to do that as we scatter to different places throughout the week at all times. See the difference there? As a church, we do this together at set times, but as individuals, we scatter throughout our community. And all times of the week, we want to be sent people. Just like Jesus was sent, each of us needs a sense of ownership of this mission. So how do we scatter and embrace this kind of guerrilla lover warfare in our lives personally? And another follower of Jesus named Peter says this. He says, but in your hearts, set apart Christ as Lord. Always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope that you have. But do this with gentleness and respect. You see, part of being a guerrilla lover is the manner and how we love people. Gentleness and respect. How many people would say Christians, oh, they're the gentle and respectful ones? You know, I didn't even have to ask you to laugh. Like, your laughter is like, yeah, people don't know Christians like that. People know Christians totally differently. So what if Christians had a different reputation that was gentle and respect, that kept a clear conscience, so that those who speak maliciously against your good behavior in Christ may be ashamed of their slander? He emphasizes there again, good behavior. See, there's a way we're supposed to conduct ourselves as followers of Jesus Christ. When we make Jesus Lord of our life, it changes who we are on the inside and how we treat people from the outside. And eventually, as we love people over and over and over, consistently, time after time, they'll say, why do you do that? Why do you serve people like that? Why do you care about people so much? And it's because we're a gorilla lover. So what are some of the changes that we have to make in our lives personally to be a gorilla lover? And the first thing, I think, is we have to change the way we think. And by the way we think, I'm talking about how we think about ourselves. Like, who are you? Not just your name, not just are you a husband, a wife, a friend, a roommate, a student, whatever label you might wear. That's a passive label. You see, sent one is an active label. You know, a soldier who's in battle isn't thinking in the moment that bullets are flying by what errands they need to take care of at home. They're thinking about how to engage in battle, how to survive, not only how to survive, but how to overtake the enemy. You know, if we change the way we think about ourselves, we'll go to work this week much differently. We'll go to school thinking about ourselves much differently. I'm not just a student here. I'm not just supposed to get good grades. I'm not just supposed to make money. But I'm actually somebody sent by Jesus Christ. See, my problem is I think about myself, I'm just Tim. I'm just a normal guy. I'm a husband. I'm a dad who has 5 kids. And when I just view myself that way, it's passive. But if I view myself before I go out the door every day as being a sent one to the people that I engage with, I'll engage them in a different way. See, the Apostle Paul writes about this identity in another part of the Bible where he says, we are therefore Christ's ambassadors. As though God were making his appeal through us, we implore you on Christ's behalf, be reconciled to God. You see that label again and again throughout the Bible. Not just sent ones who are loving in a gorilla lover type of way, but an ambassador who represents somebody who's higher than them. So the person that we represent is God, and we represent his interests in this world. When I was a pastor in New Jersey, I was a pastor in South Jersey area for 10 years, and I oversaw and led our students that were part of the church. And we would do this 1 week trip where we would just go into the community and do a whole bunch of different things. But for this week, we didn't go anywhere like far away. We just stayed close by. One of the spots was Camden, New Jersey, one of the most violent cities in America. And the students would go to Camden, New Jersey during the day because it was a day camp that took care of kids that went to camp for free. And so during this week, we would just be a camp counselor for a week and take care of children, play with them, have a great time. Then at night, we'd go and we'd give free water ice away at the baseball fields in the area. And we would just kind of just say, hey, we love you, care about you, give free water ice away. We would then put sandwiches together, and we threw a party for the homeless community that was in our area. And we would just give and be generous. We would help different families out with different housework and chores that they had that they weren't able to take care of. And this trip for the students, that wasn't really a trip because we stayed in our own community, it was the highlight for them. Of all the fun things that they did in church life, this was one of the highlights for them. And the thing that we did is we said, but it doesn't have to end this week. This is the whole point of this week. And this is the whole point of why we did it in our community. So that you can see we still do this when this trip ends. When you go to school and you see a friend or a student that doesn't have a lunch or doesn't have enough lunch, share your meal with him. And so when you see somebody who's being left out, include them. Live this way at home. So you love taking care of kids. Well, do you have any siblings? Take care of them. You don't have to leave your house to be sent for Jesus and to represent Jesus to other people. You can represent Jesus just in your own home. You know, that's the connection we made with those students. And the connection can be made for us too. Where we go, if we're not a student, if we go to work or we go out when you know, talk to the cashier in line at the grocery store or Walmart or Target or wherever you shop. They're not just a person that's helping you buy groceries or items. They're a person that has a soul that's going to spend eternity somewhere. And how will they know about Jesus if nobody is ever sent to tell them about Jesus? And it doesn't mean that line, you go ahead and you have like a 10-minute conversation about Jesus and go through the whole Bible story with them. But it means, say, how's your day going? Say, oh, I'm an introvert. Just ask that one question. How's your day? That'll be a huge win for any introvert. For an extrovert, keep the conversation going. What else do you do outside of Target during the week? And so what are you looking forward to this week? I don't know. Just have conversation and speak to people like a person, because I think sometimes we think about people as they exist to serve us. So if we change the way we think, then we change the way we look at people. And that's what I'm talking about right now, is the way we look at people. Sometimes we just think about people exist to serve us. And you're like, I don't think about people that way. Well, think about your trash man. When's the last time you talked to him or noticed him? So probably when he forgot to pick up the trash, right? Because he exists to serve you. See, just functionally, we think people serve us sometimes. We're not that arrogant to think that the whole world exists to serve our needs, but sometimes we can function that way and just not treat people as people. Have you ever thought about just making cookies for your trash man? Maybe you want to do that this week. Go out and bring him something to drink. You know, and just care about them. Because all these people that we interact with throughout the week are people that need to hear about Jesus Christ. And they won't if the church just says, come and see what we do because we put a sign in the street, or because we run an ad on Facebook, or because we give somebody an invitation to church. People will come and see once we go and do. And God's put these people in our lives. He's put this person in your life. And so as a guerrilla lover, we think differently about ourselves. We look differently at the world. And then we need to change the way we feel. And by the way we feel, I mean like almost like sick. There's this word in the Bible that we know is very common to us. It's called compassion. But the literal translation of the original word that's written in Greek, the Bible was written in the Greek language and then translated to the English language, is a word called splagna. Like stick your finger down your throat and make a word that's like splagna. Say splagna real quick with me. Splagna on the count of three. One, two, three. Splagna. Okay. So splagna is compassion. And Jesus had splagna all the time. He had it when he went to crowds that were in towns and villages. He said they just looked like sheep that needed a shepherd. They had no leadership. He had compassion for people that were sick. He had compassion for people that were down and out. He had this splagna. And if you don't understand what splagna is, maybe you've seen it and experienced it as you watch the commercial with Sarah McLachlan music to the SPCA when it says the answer for the animal need 18 months, you can provide food and shelter and the love that this animal needs. Anybody ever feel a splagna for that cat or dog? So, two people. But here's some serious things that we feel splagna for. Headlines ripped just from our world. Kid bullied as onlookers look on doing nothing. Sent to hospital. You feel splagna for that kid. Kind of feel a little bit of anger for the people that looked and didn't do anything. You feel splagna for this past week, a toddler who is allergic to dairy dies when fed a grilled cheese sandwich at his daycare. You feel splagna, you feel sick for that kid and for his family. Another headline, zombie-like children found starving in a home filled with feces. That's splagna. That sick feeling. That's what the word splagna is getting at, is that guttural feeling of being sick. And I'll tell you something, if we want to be a gorilla lover, we need to ask God to stir that in us for people that are not connected to him through a life-giving relationship with Jesus Christ. We need to be like the Desmond Dosses of this world going into the battlefield, realizing people need life. And apart from Jesus Christ, they don't have life. I'll be honest with you, I didn't have much splagna in my heart for people throughout my life. When I think about this Ending Hunger event that we're doing next week at United for Ending Hunger, I just thought that was like a way the middle class is trying to, you know, raise money, put some meals together, and feel better about serving the poor. Until I heard a story about somebody that actually benefited from something like that. That's a real need in our community. That our community isn't just middle class. There really are children that go home. They don't know if they're going to have a meal that weekend. you're going to need to bring your tissues next week, and if you come for our United Ending Hunger event, because you'll hear one of those stories of a man whose life has been changed because people did that for him. They fed him meals when he didn't have meals. I had Splagna when I heard about we opened up a food pantry in Owings Mills High School for the community. And when I heard that they were giving food away, but they couldn't even eat the food that was canned because they don't have can openers. Like, oh my goodness. Like, just thinking about people in our community, things that I take for granted. I have Splagna. I have compassion for people. See, that's guerrilla love. And our community responded to that. We hung out about close to 5,000 door hangers for that. And we filled up the food pantry at Owings Mills High School to overflowing, so much so that we brought a huge shipment to the Community Crisis Center up the street in Reisterstown. And our community did that. Not us as a church, don't pat ourselves on the back, but our community, Owings Mills, wants to help people too. But do we have Splagna for people that are down and out, for that are hurting, that are broken, and that are disconnected from Jesus Christ? That's guerrilla love. We need to change the way we feel. And the last thing is we need to change the way we move. A few years ago at Princeton University, there were psychologists that decided to replicate the story of the Good Samaritan. If you're not familiar with the story of the Good Samaritan, there's a guy on the side of the street that is basically in need and is ignored by all these passerbyers until the Good Samaritan comes and helps him out. And so the study is they get all these people who are called into ministry, want to be preachers or pastors, and they give them a sermon to teach. Half of them are supposed to teach the sermon of the Good Samaritan. The other half are just given another assignment. They're sent to the other side of campus, and they prepare their message, and they're just going to give like a 5 to 10 minute message. And what they did is they set up and on their course to get back to where they were going to prepare and give their message was there was going to be a homeless person that was just like kind of like crying out and in pain along the way and along the path. And you might think, oh, the people that were preparing the Good Samaritan message might be more inclined to stop than the people that didn't prepare the message. But what they did is that wasn't the test of that. That had no difference in who responded to this gentleman that was acting as if he was homeless. What made the difference was this. They came in and they said, oh no, you're late. We got to get over to the other side of campus so that you can teach your message. And then the other group, they said, hey, you got plenty of time. We're going to go over to the other side of campus, take your time, and we're going to head over. 10% of the people that were told they're late only stopped to help this man. 63% of the people that said, yeah, I got plenty of time, they were the ones that stopped and helped. See, there's an equation for this guerrilla lover concept that we're talking about. And it's Splagna minus speed equals guerrilla love. See, because we all have agendas, right, throughout the week. We all busy. We're fast-paced. We're going here and there. I can't talk and have this conversation. I can't do this. And that's why we need to change the way we move, because we need to slow down. Because it doesn't matter if we're preparing a message on the Good Samaritan or not. It prepares if we have time, if we have less speed going on in our life. See, the naturally compassionate people of the world, preachers that want to go into preaching because they want to help people, 10% of them didn't stop, but 63% did, just because of the factor of time. So those are the things that we need to be a guerrilla lover. Maybe you're thinking, man, I'm not a really good guerrilla lover. You know what? We always want to be better at this. And God wants to help us. But will you decide today to change and to invite God to help you to change, to be a guerrilla lover? To say, I'm going to think about myself differently this week when I go out. So just that phrase, guerrilla lover, the reason I use it is because it's so memorable, right? I'm going to think this way about who I am. And then I'm going to look at people differently. And then I'm going to feel compassion for people when I see them in situations and circumstances that are hard and challenging. And then I'm going to ask God to give me Splagna. In the same way that I've been sent, Jesus Christ said, I now send you. United Church, guests, Christ followers, even if you're not a Christ follower, this is a great way to live. It's a great way to live life, loving other people. So much better than the alternative. And this is what Jesus wants for us to experience new life in him. See, we engage and grow loving our community, not just as a church together, when we gather at events and projects in different times, or certain times, but when we scatter in different places. I just want to pray for us that we would be a church that is just characterized by this, that we would be people in the different corners of life in this society that we go to, that would be that person that's a gorilla lover. Let me pray for us.